Well, it's good to see each of you here this morning, and we have a number of visitors that are with us. We're especially glad to have you here this morning. We hope that you can stay long enough for us to greet you personally at the end of the service, and if you have the opportunity, that you will come back to be with us. Those of you that are regular here know that we're in Mark's Gospel, and we're in Mark's Gospel again this morning. Our reading is going to begin in chapter 10, going through verse 12. So we're going to read in just a moment. In chapter 10, verse 1, going through verse 12, where Jesus answers a question that the Pharisees bring to him about divorce. Before we read there, if we're wondering how God views divorce, we would only need to go to the Old Testament book of Malachi, chapter 2, and verse 16, as our brother read for us this morning, to read that God hates divorce. God's prophet Malachi there accuses the Israelites, "You've dealt treacherously with the wife of your youth. She is your companion, your wife by covenant. Let no one deal treacherously with his wife." And in verse 16 he says, "For the Lord God of Israel says that he hates divorce." That is God's attitude toward a practice that had become prevalent among the Jews who had returned from exile. It was prevalent in the first century when Jesus is speaking now in the passage that we'll read from. And as you well know, it's a widespread practice in our day. So let's read our passage this morning, and then we will orient ourselves to the setting that brings it about, and then examine what Jesus said in answer to the question. Mark chapter 10, verse 1. "Then he arose from there and came to the region of Judea by the other side of the Jordan. And multitudes gathered to him again, and as he was accustomed, he taught them again. The Pharisees came and asked him, 'Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife?' Testing him. And he answered and said to them, 'What did Moses command you?' They said, 'Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and to dismiss her.' And Jesus answered and said to them, 'Because of the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this precept. But from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate.' In the house, his disciples also asked him again about the same matter. So he said to them, 'Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery.'" Now let's get the setting for this event, both with geography and chronology, along with some background as to why this question might have been asked. Verse 1 is kind of a transition here now, so we need to set the scene here. It says, "Then he arose from there." Matthew 19 is parallel to this account. Matthew says there, "When Jesus had finished these sayings..." Now, from our last lesson, if you were here for the last lesson, we know what the sayings or teachings were. The Lord had been in a house in Capernaum back in Mark 9 in verse 33, and he had been teaching the disciples. He taught lessons on humility and lessons on radical discipleship. So now Mark tells us that he got up and went from there to the other side of the Jordan. This is the end of the Lord's ministry in Galilee. It has encompassed a little more than 1 year. It is now finished. Matthew's account, chapter 19, also says, "He departed from Galilee and came to the region of Judea beyond the Jordan." Where is it that Jesus is going? Let's get a map up here and look at this. He's actually going to Perea. The word Perea is not in the scripture. It's a term that's used by Josephus. It was common in Jesus' time, a common term, and it included parts of Judea, that's Judah on this map, that's the same as Judea, and the area that was east of the Jordan, Perea. We need to be aware at this point in Mark's gospel that Mark in his gospel totally leaves out the ministry of Jesus that was done in Judea at this time. In fact, neither Matthew nor Mark gives us the events of the Judean ministry. Luke records them, and John records those events. Luke chapter 10 through chapter 18 tells about a six-month period of that Jesus ministered in Judea. That's nine chapters of teaching and parables and healing done after Jesus left Capernaum here at this time. John chapter 7 through 11 also describes the Judean ministry. It was during this time that Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. After 6 months or so of ministry in Judea, the people there had become hostile to Jesus as they had done to him in Galilee, and then the Lord crossed the Jordan into Perea. So this incident that we're reading this morning in Mark chapter 10 is telling what took place after all of that we're told in nine chapters of Luke's gospel and seven chapters of John. It's his ministry in Perea. And just one chapter is all it is, Mark chapter 10. When we get to chapter 11 in Mark's gospel, at verse 1, Jesus enters Jerusalem for the final week before his death. So Jesus is in Perea now when this incident happens. He's on his way to Jerusalem. If you look at verse 32 of chapter 10, if you have your Bible open there, I didn't put it up on the screen. Mark chapter 10, verse 32, it tells us that he's on his way to Jerusalem. If you look at verse 46 of chapter 10, it says that they came to Jericho, which is just across the Jordan, coming across from Perea, headed toward Jerusalem. So that's the orientation that I think we needed this morning. The second half of verse 1 tells us that multitudes gathered to him there in Perea. Some of that crowd may have been living in Perea. There was a fairly large Jewish population in Perea. Others may have come from Judea to the west seeking him, as multitudes had often done when they heard that Jesus was in a certain area. And also, there may have been pilgrims headed from the north, from Galilee, down to Jerusalem for the upcoming feasts. As you know, Jews from Galilee would not travel down through Samaria. Jesus traveled through Samaria, but Jews in general, and certainly the Galilean Jews coming down to Jerusalem for some of the feasts, would not travel through Samaria because the Samaritans were detested as intermarried half-breeds. And so Galilean Jews would travel all the way down on the east side of the Jordan, through Perea, and then cross over to Jericho, and from Jericho over to Jerusalem. The Pharisees, verse 2, have most likely to come to him from the west, from Judea, across the Jordan, along with many others in the crowd. Verse 2 says this, "The Pharisees came and asked him, 'Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife?'" They're not asking for information. They're asking with a sinister intent. Mark says they ask this question, testing him. Testing is the Greek word perizo, which means to make trial of. It speaks to the motive of their raising this issue of divorce. They wanted to pose a test for Jesus that he could not pass in the presence of this multitude. Most likely, they either wanted to pit Jesus against what Moses had said, or they may have wanted to set him against the view of one or more of the rabbis who had quite opposite views on this subject. Rabbi Hillel had died about 20 years before this, but historians tell us that his was the view which prevailed at this time, which said that a man could divorce his wife for almost any reason. I strongly suspect that the Pharisees knew Jesus' views of divorce because he had expressed it openly, probably several times in his ministry. We know he expressed it in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, verses 31 and 32. If these Pharisees knew his view, they knew it would not be the popular view, and maybe this crowd would not be so favorable to his teaching. There could have been even more than that going on here. As we said, their intent was undoubtedly sinister. They're in Perea. That's the territory. This is the territory of the Herods up on the map that we have up here. Perea is the territory of Antipas. He ruled over Galilee. It's the area in the green, and Perea. Herod Antipas is the one who stole his own brother's wife, and John the Baptist confronted him by telling him, "It is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife." John told him he was an adulterer. Antipas didn't like it. His wife particularly didn't like it. And, well, you know the rest of the story. We've covered it, of course, but you know it anyway. Her daughter danced, and Herod made a foolish promise, and John's head was served up on a platter. These Pharisees are now in Herod's territory. In fact, we're probably not far from his fortress at Machaerus, which shows up there at the bottom of the map there. That's the prison where John the Baptist was beheaded. And so maybe if they can get Jesus to say what John said here in Herod's territory and raise the ire of Herod and Herodias, and get maybe they can get Jesus beheaded as well. Now, that may not have been in their minds, but one wonders. Well, Jesus didn't avoid their question, verse 3. And he answered and said to them, "What did Moses command you?" Now, understand that Jesus is really asking, "What did God say?" Because what Moses said was what God said. Verse 4, they said, "Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and to dismiss her." Keep in mind that word "permitted" there, because we're going to come back to that in a little bit. Some versions say "allowed," which is a good translation of that. Verse 5, Jesus answered and said to them, "Because of the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this precept." We'll come back to those verses here in a little bit. But now Jesus is going to give four reasons, I believe, why God hates divorce. Four reasons why God hates divorce. The first is what Jesus says in verse 6. "But from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female." Now, in Matthew's account, it's interesting, he adds at the beginning of that statement, "Have you not read that he who made them in the beginning made them male and female?" Jesus says to these experts of Mosaic law, "Haven't you read Genesis 1, verse 27? Did you forget Adam and Eve? What did God do? God created a male and a female. For what purpose? For the purpose of marriage. In the order of creation, there was what? One man and one woman. There was no provision for polygamy. There was Adam and Eve. There was no Adam and Eve and Evelyn and Edith. Adam and Eve were created for each other and for no one else. It was the pattern for marriage. Why does God hate divorce? Well, it's because of what marriage is. One man and one woman. The second reason is in verse 7. It's because of the strength of the union. "For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife." Now, this is a direct quotation from Genesis 2, verse 24, you experts of the Mosaic law. This is the God-ordained view of marriage. It's an independently strong union. You leave father and mother. You break that prior bond of family, and now you be joined or cleave or cling to your wife. The idea of the word for cleave is to stick like glue, and it also carries the idea of pursuing hard after. It is two people unbreakably connected together, pursuing hard after each other to be united in mind and will and spirit and body and devotion. And then the third reason God hates divorce is found in verse 8. It's because they become one flesh. "And the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh." The first part of that is also found in Genesis 2, verse 24, you experts of the Mosaic law. "Shall become one flesh" refers specifically to the sexual union of the bodies of husbands and wives. That physical act sexually unites the whole persons of the two, so much so that by the union they are no longer two, but one flesh. This takes the idea of leaving the prior family bond and cleaving to your husband or wife to its extreme. And what comes from that union? Husband and wife are one. You can't divide one. One is the indivisible number. And that oneness, that indivisibility also can be seen in the children that come from the two because they have become one. The child that is one comes out of the two, but it's because they became one that the offspring has come about. God hates divorce because the two are not supposed to be two. They're supposed to be one. And then the fourth and final reason God hates divorce is in verse 9. It's because marriage is God's own doing. Marriage is God's own doing. Let's read it again there. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Where did marriage come from? When we're not just talking about the marriage of Christians, marriage itself, the idea of marriage. Marriage itself is a work of God. Every uniting of two people in true matrimony is a work of God. Marriage is an act of God by which He bestows upon a man and a woman the common grace of marriage and children. It was God who made man and woman and made this union possible. It was God who issued the command, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." It was God who said, "It is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helpmeet for him." It was God who brought Eve to Adam. It was God who designed marriage to be an honorable state. Every marriage is God putting a man and woman together. Marriage is not living together, living in fornication, but where there is a covenant union, God is involved. Now, who is it that wants to undo that? A work of God. Let's go back now to verses 3 and 4, as we said we would do. Jesus answered their question, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife?" And he answered their question by asking a question of his own in verse 3. "What did Moses command you?" Their answer in verse 4 was, "He permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and to dismiss her." What they're saying is, Moses allowed it. I think their intent was to imply, if not say, Moses commanded it. Because they think they have a statement from Moses in the law that lets a man put away his wife and marry another. They're referring to Deuteronomy chapter 24. Many rabbis in Jesus and the Pharisees' day viewed this passage as freedom to divorce for any cause, frivolous causes. So let's look at this passage together from the Old Testament in Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 1 through 4. It says, "When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some uncleanness in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house. When she has departed from his house and goes and becomes another man's wife, if the latter husband detests her and writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies who took her as his wife, then her former husband who divorced her must not take her back to be his wife after she has been defiled. For that is an abomination before the Lord. And you shall not bring sin on the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance." Do you realize that is all one sentence? That is all one sentence, at least in the New King James, and it is in the New American Standard also. And you got all of that in reading it, right? Maybe not. So let's break it down a little bit. But this is what the Pharisees are referring to. They believe it is their right to put away for any cause. They're saying, verse 4, "Moses said in the law, that a man was to do this when he found some uncleanness in his wife. The New American Standard and the ESV say some indecency in her. The Holman Christian Standard says something improper about her. Well, what is that? Some uncleanness, some indecency, something improper. Well, the way most had interpreted it, it could be just about anything anybody wanted it to be. Rabbi Hillel said it could be going around with loose hair or spinning in the streets so that other men see your ankles or talking to men or speaking unkindly to your mother-in-law or speaking to your husband so loudly that the neighbors hear. The Pharisees subscribed to that view. And if any of that happened, and a whole lot of other things qualified, I just mentioned some of them, you could give your wife a piece of paper and send her away, and then you could marry another. Now I want you to look at Deuteronomy 24 with me again. Do you see any command to do that in verse 1? What does it say? It says, when a man does so and so. When a man is describing a possibility, is describing a potential circumstance. A man takes a wife, he marries her. It happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he's found some indecency in her, something improper, and he writes a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of the house. Is there a command given by Moses there? There is no command. The verse simply describes something that happens. A man gets married, doesn't like her, divorces her, and she goes and marries somebody else. And then verse 3, this second husband doesn't like her either. He divorces her and sends her away. That's something that happens, Moses is saying, in Deuteronomy chapter 24. There is no command in these verses until we come to verse 4. Here's the command. And it's to the first husband who divorced her. He must not take her back because she has been defiled. That is, she is unclean to the former husband by her union with the latter husband. And so the command is this. If you divorce your wife and she marries somebody else, you can never take her back. It was a preventative that God, through Moses, put in place. So that men didn't say, I think I'd like to try another wife for a while, and if I don't like her, I'll take you back. No, you can't do that, says Moses. You cannot do that. Once you divorce your wife, and the assumption is that the wife is going to be married because she needs to be cared for, provided for, once you dismiss her, send her away, you can't take her back. So you'd better think long and hard about giving away the wife of your youth, the original love of your life, giving away the mother of your children, giving away the family, because once she connects to another person, you can never have her back. That's the command here. It's the only command in what Moses said. It's not a command to divorce. It is a command not to remarry a woman whom you have divorced, who has then been married to someone else. Deuteronomy 24 gives no grounds for divorce at all. Someone might ask, well, what about adultery? Well, that's not a consideration at all. Under the law, there was no provision to put away a wife for adultery. Adultery carried the death penalty. She would be put to death if she committed adultery along with the one with whom she committed adultery. Now let's go back to our passage in Mark chapter 10, in verse 4. The Pharisees say, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and to dismiss her. Well, that was true. He didn't command it, but he did permit it or allow it. But why? Why did Moses allow it? Verse 5. In verse 5, Jesus says this, because of the hardness of your heart, he wrote this precept. Why did Moses allow or permit such a thing? Jesus says it was because of the hardness of your heart. There are great differences between the Mosaic system and the law of Christ. Generally speaking, I think we can say there was much more carnality under the Hebrew system. God seemed in some ways to be more tolerant of humanity's weaknesses. Paul said in Acts 14 that God in bygone generations allowed all nations to walk in their own ways. In Acts 17, Paul spoke of how God overlooked their ignorance. And though these statements would likely apply more to Gentiles than to the Jews, it seems that God overlooked or allowed some things among the Jews also. One of those things was polygamy. The first instance of polygamy we read about in the Bible before Israel came about was Lamech in Genesis 4, verse 19. It just says, "Then Lamech took for himself two wives." Several prominent men, godly men in the Old Testament, were polygamists. Abraham, Jacob, David, Solomon. However, I think if we were to examine in each case, we would see that it clearly caused great problems in their families. But God allowed it, tolerated it, and also concubines. Did God want men under the Mosaic law to divorce their wives for some unseemly thing? No, that was not His will. That was not His desire. Jesus says in verse 5 that the allowance of that was because of the hardness of your heart. It was something that was the lesser of two evils, allowed apparently for the betterment of their society. Men determined to put away their wives. They were going to do it. Their hearts were set on it. And Moses allowed it because of their stubbornness. But it was for the protection of the woman who was sent away and was an order to give pause to the husband who was sending her away. Moses insisted that if the men were going to be stiff-necked and seek permission to divorce their wives, here is what they must do. They must release them permanently. Moses prohibited men from remarrying wives they had put away. He was trying to establish some order to a situation that could become totally chaotic. It was not as much permission as it was regulation to reduce wholesale abuse of women by men in that society, who could put them away and then decide to take them back at their own convenience. Jesus says then in verse 6, "But from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female." He directs these Pharisees back to God's original design of marriage. Israel's hardness of heart and Moses' order both fly in the face of God's original design of male and female in marriage. It violates God's intention from the beginning. And by the way, it's important for our society to understand that God's marriage design was originally for male and female. That is totally at odds with today's promotion and acceptance of homosexual marriage. Now let's finish up with verses 10 and following. In verse 10, the disciples wanted more explanation. It says that they wanted clarification on this subject. It says, "In the house, his disciples also asked him again about the same matter." Verse 11, "So he said to them, 'Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her.'" Mark here records the general principle. Matthew, of course, in his gospel, in Matthew 19 and verse 9, states one exception to the principle. He records Jesus saying there, "Whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery." And then in verse 12, Jesus says, "And if a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery." That permissive statement of Moses that we read back in Deuteronomy 24 made no provision for women to put away their husbands. It only made a provision for the husband to put away his wife. But Jesus is speaking now to the Pharisees and to his disciples in the first century, and Roman law under which they were did make provision for that. And so in verse 12, Jesus says, "The woman who sets her husband free, divorces him, and unites herself in marriage to another man, she enters a relationship that is continuously adulterous." Jesus says, assuming that the exception of fornication in Matthew chapter 19, verse 9, is not the grounds for the divorce. So Jesus taught the truth about marriage and divorce. No matter what the revered rabbis might believe and teach, no matter what the Pharisees might believe that Moses taught, no matter what others might practice, Jesus taught the truth about that. We need to respect marriage today and understand that God is the one who ordained it. There's another marriage that every person alive needs to be concerned about, and that's the bridegroom, Christ, who is married to his bride, the church. In fact, in Ephesians chapter 5, when Paul speaks there of marriage, the marriage relationship, he quotes the very same Old Testament passage that Jesus did in our verses we read today, Genesis 2 and verse 24, which says that a man is to be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And then in the very next verse, Ephesians 5 verse 32, Paul says, I speak concerning Christ and his church. When you repent of sins and confess Christ as Lord and are baptized into him, you are then among the saved and you are added to his church. He is the bridegroom. The church is his bride. You need to be married to Christ. If you've never been joined to him, and we urge you to do that this morning while there's both time and opportunity. If you're ready, please come while we stand together and sing.